The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast. Dr. Taz.
Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back to the show where every episode, I want you to write your own personal prescription for power. That's right. This is Power RX. And joining me today is Dr. Brooke Kalanick. Dr. Brooke is a naturopathic doctor and functional medicine practitioner. She attended Seattle, Washington's Bastyr University, where she earned a doctorate in naturopathic medicine and a master's in acupuncture and Chinese herbal medicine. Prior to that, she was working on her doctor of pharmacy degree at WSU. Welcome to the show, Dr. Brooke. We have very similar backgrounds. I am passionate about Chinese medicine. I'm so happy to have you on.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, we're going to jump right in. You work with many women, is my understanding, in your practice. Tell us a little bit how you enter the world of working with women, working with their hormones, what some of your observations have been over the years, and what we all need to be thinking about when it comes to women's hormones.
Yeah, well, like so many people that are drawn to alternative medicine from conventional medicine, I, of course, had my own health challenges that weren't, you know, being served by the model that I was in when I was working as a pharmacist. And so I sort of discovered this for my own health. I have PCOS and was dealing with, you know, what I know now were some, you know, probably adrenal issues and some foods I was, you know, not doing well with and overly stressed, and was really simple interventions. excuse me, but my MD, I am getting over my daughter's cold.
I'm sorry.
sorry, so I'm coughing a little bit. But sort of as I was finding solutions from my naturopathic doctor, which I know now were incredibly simple, and, you know, looking back, it was really a turning point for me doing things that were so easy for me to kind of take in to switch my lifestyle, switch how I was eating, switch how I was addressing stress, and really found great success for my own health. And so I transitioned on to wanting to work more in naturopathic medicine and functional medicine and leaving more of that conventional world. And, you know, I think what I learned from my experience was that unfortunately many of us have to kind of seek out when things aren't working for us. And so I wanted to be a resource that women could go to when things weren't working out, and just what a profound effect stress was having on all of our hormones. And I think even in this day and age, we talk more about that, but so many women, when they think of hormones, they still just think of estrogen and progesterone, and we kind of neglect how important that stress component is.
Well, our journeys are very similar. My entire journey into the world of integrative medicine was because I essentially had PCOS, but it took me a long time. I never got the label conventionally. It took me a long time to figure it out and figure out what I needed to do. And it was the culmination of just childhood stress and then stress through med school and residency and then shifting sleep cycles. But as I've had my practice, and I'm sure you've experienced this as well, it seems to be an epidemic. I meet younger and younger women, older women, middle-aged women, all across the spectrum, who are presenting with some version of PCOS, which, by the way, for everybody listening, is polycystic ovarian syndrome. And what do you think about this particular disease label diagnosis, why it's becoming more prevalent? What's the chemistry behind it? I'm curious, you know, kind of what your vantage point is with this and working with all the women that you see.
Yeah, well, a couple things. I think it's, you know, it's a bad name, right? Because not every woman gets a diagnosis with PCOS or is dealing with this fallout of some of these metabolic consequences actually has cysts on her ovaries. So that's a bit of a problem, right? And there's also this notion still, especially, you know, I see this all the time with doctors and personal trainers or even women thinking, well, I don't have that because I don't look that way. I don't look
that characteristic. Hear that all the time.
I'm not having a ton of facial hair. I'm not super overweight. Not losing all my hair in the front. And so I think so many women are dealing with some version of this on a spectrum, and hopefully in time we've got maybe better classifications for various androgen issues and the insulin resistance and then, you know, the inflammation. And that's, you know, something that gets, I think, still completely overlooked in this condition is we think of it maybe as some of the testosterone fallout, maybe as insulin resistance, maybe not having a cycle. But we forget kind of at the crux of our treatment sometimes that at the core of this condition is a lot of inflammation. And that's where, you know, integrative and functional medicine can really shine, because we can really get on top of that with diet and lifestyle, of course, some of our good nutritional supplements that we can use.
And I agree. I mean, I think, you know, most people, when they hear the word PCOS or the label, they're thinking of that, you know, very obese person who has a balding scalp, lots of facial hair, you know, and that's not really what it was. I didn't have that. It doesn't sound like you had it. And so many of the women that have come before me don't have that presentation. The androgens that Dr. Brooke is referring to, we always think of DHT, you know, free testosterone, DHEA. These are the hormones that are getting missed in women's wellness and in checking women's health. And I'm actually finding more and more cases of an androgen-sensitive breast cancer versus just an estrogen or progesterone breast cancer. So I do think this is really something that needs a lot more awareness. Are there other androgens, which again are the male derivatives of some of our hormones, are there other androgens that we as women need to be thinking about and then in practice checking for?
Yeah, you know, the other one that I, on that list that I check for is androstenedione, and I see that elevated mm-hmm. in a lot of women with, you know, normal testosterone, normal DHEA. So that's yet another one of our androgen hormones. And I think, too, something we want to remember with PCOS is sometimes many women have, this condition is so interesting because I think the way we look at it clinically is sometimes just completely missing the boat for women. But, you know, so many women that are having breakouts or, you know, any unwanted hair growth or even hair loss test normal for their testosterone or their free testosterone, yes. maybe even their DHEA. And that may be because we're not checking those other metabolites, the DHT and the androstenedione. But also remembering women with PCOS, our follicles in our skin, our hair follicles are much more sensitive to testosterone than your average girl. So we many times have those androgen symptoms, but our lab tests are normal. So it's just another case, you know, we of course see this with thyroid too, where it's mm-hmm. just, we look at the lab test and it's like, well, it looks normal. So I don't know. I don't know what to do for you. And it's not that. And we're sort of missing looking at the much, much bigger picture and just how women with this condition, you know, we just behave metabolically different than textbook. And so a lot of women get normal lab testing and then they really don't know where to go because they're told, well, I can't give you anything for the testosterone problem because you don't have one, but that makes right. their really do.
Yeah. So again, just an encouragement for everybody listening today, you know, who thinks you might be having something like PCOS where you're breaking out, your hair might be falling, you may have very stubborn weight loss. You know, those are some of the most common symptoms, you know, and then there's a gut component too. I've found that many of the women that have yeast or candida issues also have some level of PCOS. Many women that have Hashimoto's have some level of PCOS. So anyone who's struggling with this, have this on your radar at least and get your androgens checked. I think it's really important. You know I struggled for years without knowing that that was the missing piece for me. So, Dr. Brooke, once we accept and understand the importance of this in women's health, what does somebody do next? What's the best approach? Is it diet? Is it lifestyle? Is it supplements? Is it everything? What would you advise somebody out there who's dealing with this particular disorder somewhere on that spectrum between, you know, weight gain, insulin resistance, high androgens, hair loss, acne? What would you tell them to do?
Yeah, so I think, you know, using your symptoms or your lab tests as sort of your biggest, you know, what are your biggest pain points right now? So if it is the anovulatory cycle or if it's the breakout, so looking at, are you having excess androgens? Are you just dealing more with the trouble with ovulation? You know, where's your insulin resistance at? And probably tailor your approach to what's kind of the biggest piece of this picture that's showing up for you now. Like I said before, the two things we know for sure, we know there's inflammation. So be sure we're addressing that. And like you said, most of that starts in the gut, right? We have so much inflammation from mm-hmm. eating the wrong foods or having a disrupted gut of any type of infection or, you know, disruption in our microbial balance. So poor digestion in general. And so many of us are eating foods that we don't know are bothering us, or we over, you know, I've got so many women that they're having all this, you know, histamine intolerance, and that's not something people are talking about. We talk about gluten, but we don't necessarily talk about mm-hmm. why maybe going on a, let's say a Whole30 and eating a bunch of fermented foods made some of your symptoms worse. So really right. trying to figure out, and hopefully taking a good, you know, low inflammatory diet approach to start with. And if that hasn't worked, get some help kind of cleaning up your gut microbiome balance and you're getting some digestive support and healing that up. Our gut is a hotbed of inflammation and they're often kind of a mess, but they do heal. We can correct a lot of these things. Looking at that, looking if there's any foods you might be sensitive to, looking for any other sources of inflammation. So, you know, we forget how inflammatory stress is and lack of sleep. And I would say if there's one thing probably all women need to do to deal with their hormones, and especially women with PCOS, it's absolutely looking at the stress component, whether that's your emotional stress, your lifestyle stress, too busy, too many things going on. And so many of us are not getting enough sleep. Such a fundamental Definitely. One. That's not only going to drive the inflammation, it's of course in time going to make our, all that stress, going to make our insulin resistance components worse. And then I would say after that, tackle those individual pieces of how do I need to be adjusting my, well, exercise I think really falls under the stress umbrella. Many, many women are either overdoing it or underdoing it. Maybe I can talk about that in a second. But looking at what you then need to do for exercise, lifestyle, and then for supplements, I really think that there's some core things that can be really helpful for women with PCOS. And I don't like to be a downer and say PCOS, you know, is forever, but it is a chronic metabolic Achilles heel at the very least, even when really we're healed, right? There's certain things that if you and I went and ate McDonald's every day and didn't get any sleep and never exercised, we would probably be reeling with a lot of fallout from PCOS, but it's much more managed doing certain things. So I think there's some nutrients long-term, making sure our blood sugar is really balanced and things like inositol can be really helpful for the long-term. We know vitamin D is important, making sure our methylation and our B vitamin status is good. Getting those pieces in place and then working on, you know, again, are you dealing with a lot of high androgen symptoms? There's lots of herbs and nutrients we can use for that. Or are we dealing with more, you know, progesterone support and estrogen imbalance? So after that, kind of taking it with your individual flavor of PCOS.
More with my guest coming up, but right now I want to tell you about Grove Collaborative, products for a beautiful and healthy home. You guys have heard me talk about your toxic load and how important it is to pay attention to what we're using on our bodies and in our home. It directly impacts our health. Grove Collaborative makes it easy to discover amazing natural home and personal care products. Grove selects only the best non-toxic products so you can shop with confidence, knowing that everything on their site is good for you, your family, and the planet. I want you to try Grove Collaborative. So right now, when you spend $20 or more on your first order, you'll get a free $30 Mrs. Meyers kit, plus a bonus gift, plus a free 2-month VIP trial membership. The bonus gift is a tea towel. Go to grove.co/wholehealth to claim your special offer. That's grove.co, not grove.com, grove.co/wholehealth to get the special offer.
What are your favorite androgen balancing herbs out of curiosity?
We use a lot of the stuff that we use for prostate cancer, right? If we're dealing with DHT issues where we've got some of those elevated androgens, then we can use things like saw palmetto and chrysin. And zinc is really amazing. If, you know, for women, if you can only take 2 supplements for your hormone balance, it's probably magnesium and zinc. They're going to kind of help across the board. And then if you're dealing with especially the cysts on the ovaries and we're making a lot of testosterone in the ovary getting converted from progesterone, white peony is an herb that we also really, really get great results with in that regard. But to me, with everything that I try to do, it's like, let's go back to where is this coming from? And so much of that testosterone, you know, metabolism stuff is fueled by imbalanced blood sugar. So always going back to how can we, again, get on top of that inflammation and get on top of, you know, balancing your blood sugar. And many women with PCOS deal with both the insulin problems. They have fallout if they eat too much or too often or too many carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. And many of them have adrenal issues too. So they're dealing with fallout if they skip a meal or if they try keto or fasting or some of these things that you might read about might be an advantage for insulin resistance because they've also got this, you know, low cortisol problem.
So what's the best? Do you have like a diet? Like I've noticed some of my PCOS patients do really well. First, my recommendation was always gluten-free because I found the gluten was such an overlap with my PCOS patients. And then, you know, shifted to like a modified keto diet almost where I want them having more of the fat because it controls the insulin or it manages the insulin resistance much better. Is there something that you've observed that works generally? I know everyone's unique and individual, but it works generally for most of your PCOS patients. From a diet perspective?
I usually, as far as like getting, you know, like average woman who's not really done a lot of this stuff before, of course, you and I probably get a lot of patients that have tried like 800 diets, right? And then we have to be a little more selective. But if you're sort of just getting started, I usually put women on sort of a modified paleo diet. So really kind of working on, again, focusing on lowering inflammation, healing the gut, and then working on what carbohydrates, like from grains and some of those more, you know, those type of carbohydrates, can they come back and in what amounts? And my most important thing, so that's usually where I start. I will also start, if there's a lot of estrogen imbalance, I usually lean towards not a low fat diet, but a lower animal fat and a higher plant fat diet so that we're making sure that they're not getting too many of those endocrine disruptors, which are found even in our healthiest animals. We still, our environment's just so polluted with excess androgens. So fat, of course, really important. Protein, really important. Vegetables, like women need a pound of vegetables a day. So starting with, you know, that kind of modified template, shifting the animal fat ratio if we feel like we need to towards more plant fats. But again, keeping the fat, the protein, and the vegetables really high. And then I always focus on finding your unique carb tolerance. I think it's always a kind of a knee-jerk reaction for us to go super low carb for PCOS. And for some women, that works great. It certainly worked great for me until I had kids. That worked really, really well for me. And then I have worse adrenal issues now. So that doesn't work as well, or at least it didn't kind of in those, you know, new years with new kids. So I think that thinking about how many carbohydrates can you tolerate, what kinds you tolerate, how much at what meals, you know, a lot of women with insulin resistance do better, like you said, with keto, or even like maybe one serving of carbohydrate a day, maybe at dinner. Where someone with a lot of adrenal issues, that's going to be really hard for them. So they might need to take a small amount of carbohydrate a couple times a day. And I'm talking like a few bites. I think so often when we think of a serving, it's like a cup. And sometimes it's just a little bit to take the edge off, because if you're dealing with both low blood sugar and high blood sugar, that can often be just such a tough combination to not only get any sort of weight loss results, but just keeping your energy and your cravings managed. So sometimes if we go too low for those women, they do better with like kind of a little smattering to take the heat off while we're fixing their adrenals. But ultimately with PCOS, we got to always make sure we're watching that insulin component and leaning probably what would be more low carbohydrate for most people. But if it's, again, I just see so many women kind of going too low just because that makes sense for the PCOS, and forgetting that we might also have these sad little adrenals or even a sad thyroid in the mix there too.
So for those PCOS patients with adrenal issues, what are some of your favorite carbs for them to substitute? Because the other thing I've noticed too for many is when they go too low carbs, there's more anxiety and more depression. So including that small serving of carbs at nighttime sometimes is helpful. So, but what are the good sources? It's not eating, you know, a piece of cake. What are the best sources of some of those complex carbs that still don't mess with the insulin component that much?
Yeah, I go for, you know, initially those grain-free carbs, just because I find there's so much gut disruption, so much inflammation, and that can be kind of a good way to at least reset. And then, so that tends to be like sweet potatoes, beets, the root vegetables, and some fruit. And then from there, depending on how you're doing, we can talk about doing some food sensitivity testing, or maybe putting in some of the whole grain carbohydrates back. And, you know, remembering too that in this day and age, it's easy to be gluten-free because we've got gluten-free crackers and bread and all that kind of stuff. But, and that may be better for our immune system in some ways, but of course that all ends up just being like another, you know, junky carbohydrate. And they should be used in moderation. So I think carbohydrates tend to be just so individual in finding like the ones that work for you and the amounts and the time. But I usually start with those root vegetable based ones. And then there are women that, you know, just need more protein and don't need to put too much carbohydrate in the diet. And they kind of think that they do because they're underdoing the protein. We can, of course, utilize that for fuel as well. So I usually start there and then migrate back into some of those other grain based foods if they feel like they need more variety and they tolerate them well.
Fantastic. One last question I have to get in because I know you guys want me to ask this. What about working out with PCOS? My marathon runners, my, you know, spinners, my people that do Orange Theory, what does that do to our androgens? Do they need to stop it? Do they need to balance? Where do you kind of put your advice there?
Yeah, so I think this one is really tricky, right? Because just like the food and the carbohydrates, there's a little bit of completely opposing views, right? If you've got insulin resistance alone, then it's like, get a lot of exercise, work out really hard. You really need to burn off all that fuel. You've got an inefficient metabolism. And then only look at like, you most likely, you know, I'm sure you see this too. How many women come into us and see us with just PCOS, right? They've also got compromised thyroid. They've also got lots of inflammation. They've usually got some adrenal issues. So when we're dealing with all of that, we want to make sure that we don't just look at the insulin resistance and honor those more delicate hormones as well. So it gets a little bit tricky. If you're solely dealing with insulin resistance, again, I think we can tolerate quite a bit of exercise. Muscle is your friend when you have, well, all of us for longevity, but certainly when you have insulin issues, muscle is your reserve of insulin sensitivity. So we want muscle. So to me, the core of any exercise regimen needs to be strength training. And the secondarily is probably walking. We need a lot more activity and movement than most of us get. We sit a lot. We sit in our car. We sit at the office. And so we need that, you know, we're bipeds. So we need to be walking and doing that motion as well. And that usually is what I call a really low grade form of cardio. And then somewhere in the middle is all that other stuff, all the fat burning stuff, all the high intensity stuff, spinning, things like that. And to me, if your adrenals can't handle it, those things need to stay out until you can fix the adrenals, because you just perpetuate this cycle of cortisol. And of course, that makes thyroid and insulin and all those other hormone imbalances worse. So I usually, if there's a conflict, so one, let's say if you've been diagnosed with adrenal fatigue or adrenal HPA axis dysfunction or something going on with that, you're usually told don't do anything. You can do some yoga, some walking. You need to completely stop. But then you look at your PCOS and you're like, well, I also have insulin resistance. So pretty much every time I eat, I have a harder time utilizing that, not storing it as fat, than someone else. So what do I do? So if there's a conflict there, then I always say you follow my little hierarchy. So address, make sure you honor your high cortisol, I'm sorry, your low cortisol and your low thyroid stuff first, and move on down the list to high cortisol and then insulin resistance and then estrogen and progesterone imbalance. So for women with PCOS, weight loss is often a concern, even if it's only 5 pounds. Many women find that, like, yep, even a few pounds is just more difficult for us. So mm-hmm. I want to, you know, make sure that we honor that for women that are working on it. You just don't want to do anything that exacerbates those other hormones, because you end up in just that vicious cycle. So I think weight training is kind of the piece that women forget. And if we do weight training, it tends to be a lighter weight that's not really kind of getting that magic metabolic mix for both fat burning and longevity and anti-inflammatory. We tend to kind of skew towards something we could lift many, many times for the hour-long duration of a class.
I love that. I know firsthand and through my family. I mean, within our family, we have different age-based versions of PCOS, including my mom, who's in her 60s. And I know the desperation each of us have gone through to kind of lose that five to six pounds. And anytime it's too extreme, you worsen your androgens. So thinking through weight training, isometric resistance, those are great ways to sort of, you know, manage the exercise component of this while you're managing the insulin and the androgens and everything else that goes into this, really this modern day epidemic. I think our environment and our culture and our food sourcing and, you know, endocrine disruptors and toxicity have all played a hand in this. And then, of course, as women, we're doing more than we've done than any previous generation in history. So our stress levels are at an all-time high. Dr. Brooke, this has been great. I hope anyone out there has learned more about PCOS and will spread this information out there. I don't want anyone to go through the struggles that you or I had in our early 20s trying to put the pieces together all by ourselves. If people want to connect with you, Dr. Brooke, what's the best way for them to find you?
Yeah, so my website is betterbydrbrooks.com. And I should mention, I have a PCOS program. You were asking me what I wanted to
do. Oh, there we go.
It's called Empowered PCOS. Yeah, it's called
Details.
It's called Empowered. There we go. Empowered PCOS. And it's really focused on a couple of things. One, you know, education of helping women just really understand this better, because I feel like, you know, so many of us get this diagnosis and it's like, well, here's the pill, and we don't really have anything else. Until you want to get pregnant, we've got more drugs for that, but there's nothing right. else. And there's, I think when you understand it, it makes it easier to sift through how to find the right diet, how to find the right carbs, how to find the right exercise. So it's not open now, but you can find that on my website. So that is betterbydrbrooks.com. I'm on Instagram and Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, also at betterbydrbrooks.com. And I have a podcast weekly with Sarah Fragoso, and that's Better Every Day with Sarah and Dr. Brooke.
Awesome. Well, I hope everybody learned so much from all this great information. And remember, every day is an opportunity to find your personal power, write your own personal prescription for power, and be the best version of yourself that you can be. Thank you for joining, and we'll see you again next time.